Assalamu alaikum students. On behalf of the Ministry of Science and Technology, the Virtual University of Pakistan and Mubashir Humayun, I welcome you to another lecture in financial management. Today we are going to talk about a key building block and concept of capital structure, which is known as the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, and it is also known as WACC for short. In the previous lecture, we introduced some of the broad concepts of capital structure. We spoke about the requirement for companies to raise money or capital in one of two basic ways. One way is to raise money in the form of equity, and the other is to raise money in the form of debt. We mentioned that the objective of the company or firm is to minimize the cost at which it raises the capital. So just as when you go to the market, you try to buy something at the lowest possible cost, similarly, when companies go looking for money in the financial markets and capital markets, they try to collect the money at the lowest possible cost. This means that when a company raises money in the stock market, that it tries to sell its share at the maximum price possible so that it can get as much equity capital from the same number of shares as possible. And when a company goes to the money market to get debt or loan, then it tries to get the loan at the lowest possible interest rate. The objective of the company is to get the financing or capital at the lowest possible cost. And companies do this by marketing themselves as firms that have very, very low risk and very high profitability. We mentioned that the weighted average cost of capital is similar to a concept that we talked about earlier, which was known as the required rate of return. The required rate of return was used very early on by us in the NPV equations. The discount rate in the NPV formula is the required rate of return. Also, the discount rate used in the bond pricing equation and the stock pricing equation, such as the Gordon's formula, is also the required rate of return. This is the opportunity cost for the investor, and the required rate of return represents the minimum rate of return which the investor expects to receive based on his opportunity cost. And by opportunity cost, we mean the rate of return that an investor sacrifices by investing in the present investment. So the rate of return that he can get from the second best investment is the opportunity cost, or the required rate of return. From the capital asset pricing model, it is possible for us to estimate the required rate of return using the SML equation. And we mentioned that the required rate of return is equal to the risk-free rate of return plus the risk premium multiplied by the beta, or the market risk for a particular stock. Now, there is a slight difference between the required rate of return and the weighted average cost of capital that we will be talking about now. The weighted average cost of capital is generally applied to entire companies or firms, not just a particular stock or a particular bond. So when we talk about the weighted average cost of capital, we generally include three possible types of capital instruments. One of them is the debt or bond, the other one is the preferred stock, and the third one is the common stock. We will shortly discuss the formula and we will do some numerical examples for calculating the WACC. But before I go into that, let me mention that the weighted average cost of capital is slightly different from the required rate of return because WACC takes into account some real-world and practical considerations such as the impact of taxes and transaction costs or flotation costs associated with issuing and selling and marketing the financial securities like stocks and bonds. Now, let us talk about the computation of the weighted average cost of capital. The formula for calculating the WACC, which is an average percent that represents the average cost of capital in the form of a percentage, is equal to RDXD plus RPXP plus REXE. And what do we mean by these R's and X's? Here the R represents the cost in the form of a percentage, and X represents the weight or the fraction of the capital in that particular type of instrument. Let us discuss this formula in slightly more detail. If you take a look at the slide, then we will go through the formula in further detail. The weighted average cost of capital is equal to RDXT plus REXE plus RPXP. Now here, if you look at the first term, RDXD, that refers to the weighted percent cost of debt or the bond. RD is the average rational investor's required rate of return for investing in the bond, and XD is the weight or fraction of the total capital value raised from bonds. In other words, it's equal to the value of the bonds divided by the total capital. Similarly, REXE represents the percent cost of common equity. This is the cost to the company of raising money through common equity. RD, or rather RE, in this case, is the average rational investor's required rate of return for investing in the common share of the company. And XE is the fraction of the total capital raised from common equity. Finally, the last term, RPXP, represents the percent cost of preferred equity. And the RP refers to the average rational investor's required rate of return for investing in the preferred share of the company. And XP is the fraction of the total capital raised using the preferred equity. Now, let us talk about the first term, which is the percent cost of debt, represented by RD multiplied by XD. The first term in this is the R sub D, which is the required rate of return, and the cost of debt can be interpreted as the required rate of return. You will recall that when we were talking about bond pricing, that we also spoke about the overall return on a bond, and that is referred to as the yield to maturity, or YTM. YTM is equal to the interest yield plus the capital gains yield. And the YTM is in some way representative of the overall cost of the debt in the form of a bond. So when we talk about the cost to a company for raising money in the form of debt or a bond, then what we are saying is that, practically speaking, if a company goes to the money market and sells its bond paper in the market. In return, the company will receive money from the bondholders. However, the actual market price at which the company sells its bond paper in the money market might be different from the price that is quoted on the piece of paper, on the bond itself. In other words, the market price of the bond might be different from the face value or par value of the bond. And we have spoken about this earlier. So practically speaking, we have to keep in mind that when we are calculating the actual cost of debt or the cost of a bond, that we have to keep in mind that the bond might be sold in the market at a price that is different from the par value. Therefore, a bond might be sold either at a premium or at a market price which is higher than the par value, or it might be sold at a discount, which means that it will be sold at a market price which is lower than the par value of the bond. That is one practical consideration that we need to keep in mind. The second practical consideration is related to taxes. It's a very important point that the interest that a company pays to the bondholders, or the interest that a company pays to a bank, is tax deductible. In other words, if you recall from the income statement or profit and loss statement, you will remember that we calculate the net income after subtracting the interest and other financial charges. This means that when a company pays tax on the net income, that it does not pay tax on the interest that has been paid to the bondholders or to the bank. This is an inherent advantage of debt, that the interest that is paid to the bondholders or the investors in debt is not taxed. Therefore, in calculating the actual cost of debt, we have to keep in mind that the cost is slightly reduced because of the tax saving. Now, let us do a simple numerical example to better understand the calculation of the cost of debt. If you take a look at the slide, you will see that we are talking about a company ABC that issues a 2-year bond of par value 1,000 rupees and a coupon rate of 10% per annum with annual coupon payments. Company ABC pays an investment bank 50 rupees per bond paper to structure and market the bond. Company ABC pays an investment bank 50 rupees per bond paper to structure and market the bond. They decide to sell the bond for 950 rupees, which means that they are selling it at a discount below the par value of the bond, which was 1,000 rupees. At the end of the first year, company ABC's income statement shows that the coupon interest paid to the bondholders as an expense. Interest represents a tax saving or a tax shield, and based on the net income and industry standard, the marginal corporate tax rate is 30% of the net income. Assuming that the 2-year bond represents the only form of capital, calculate the after-tax weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, for company ABC. So we have just set up a simple problem whereby the company ABC is planning to raise capital through debt by issuing a 2-year bond at a certain par value and a certain coupon rate, and it has hired an investment bank and paid the money for the structuring and the marketing and selling of this bond in the open market. Now, we are interested in calculating the actual cost to the company of raising money in the form of this bond. And before we take a look at the numerical for calculating the cost of capital, let me present to you our overall strategy. We will use the old bond pricing equation to calculate the price of this bond using present value. We will then account for the transaction cost that we paid to the investment bank by deducting it from the estimated price of the bond. And finally then, we will apply the IRR technique in order to calculate the yield to maturity from the bond pricing equation. After we have calculated the yield to maturity, which represents the gross cost of capital for this bond, we will then finally account for the impact of the tax saving and calculate the actual cost of capital for this bond. So let us go ahead with that and see how the numerical calculation carries through. If you take a look at the slide, you will see that we begin the calculation of the cost of capital for this debt instrument or bond with the present value equation for the bond. It's a two-year bond, and for 2 years we receive the coupons, and in the final year, the second year, we also receive or recover the par value of the bond. The equation for present value is as follows. PV is equal to 100 divided by 1 plus R plus 100 divided by 1 plus R squared plus 1000 divided by 1 plus R squared. Now, the present value in our case is equal to the net proceeds, which is different from the market price that we used earlier. In this case, since we are doing a practical real-world calculation, we have to account for transaction costs. So we will set the present value equal to the net proceeds, which is equal to the market price minus the transaction costs. That is equal to 950 rupees minus 50 rupees, and that is equal to 900 rupees. So now we can solve the present value equation because it has only one unknown, which is R. If you look at the equation, then its highest order is the second power. Therefore, it is a quadratic equation, and we can use the quadratic formula to calculate the two values for R. If you use the formula, you will see that R is equal to either minus 5% or plus 16%. Well, we will ignore the answer, which is minus 5%, because it is impractical. So the gross cost of capital is equal to 16%. Now we have to take into account the impact of tax savings on the cost of debt. And quite simply, all we need to do is to reduce the value of R by the percentage of tax that applies to the value of R. So the net cost of debt is equal to RD star multiplied by 1 minus TC, where TC is the marginal corporate tax rate. That is equal to 16% multiplied by 1 minus 0.3, and that is equal to 11.2%. Please note that we are assuming that the tax rate is 30% of the net income. So finally, in order to calculate the weighted average cost of capital for the company, assuming only debt, the answer that we have is that the WACC is equal to RDXD plus RPXP plus REXE, and that is equal to 11.2%. So what we are saying is that the overall weighted average cost of capital for the company ABC, if it only raises capital through debt, is equal to 11.2%. We do not have to worry about any preferred stock or common stock in this case, because we are assuming that the entire capital is represented by debt. This is an unrealistic assumption, but it is just there to illustrate how you can calculate the cost of debt. Now, let's talk about the cost of preferred equity or preferred stock. This was the second term on the right-hand side of the WACC equation. And the important thing to remember here is that we calculated the price of preferred stock quite simply using the perpetuity formula. The perpetuity formula told us that the theoretical or fair price of the preferred share is equal to the forecasted dividend for the next year divided by the required rate of return for the investors who are investing in the preferred equity. We can rearrange this equation and solve it for the required rate of return. So the required rate of return, RP, would be equal to div 1 divided by P sub naught, where P naught represents the market price of the preferred share. Now, that was the case of the required rate of return. However, as I mentioned, when we are trying to calculate the cost of capital, we have to take into account practical considerations. And in this case, we need to take into account whatever transaction costs and flotation costs that are attached with the printing, issuance, and marketing of a preferred stock certificate. So, instead of using the market price of the preferred share to calculate the required rate of return, we need to look at the net proceeds, just as we did for the bond. The net proceeds is equal to the market price minus the transaction costs. And again, the transaction costs are costs that are paid to lawyers and brokers and investment banks, and the cost of printing that goes into the issuance and the marketing of a preferred share. Now, let us take a look at a simple example to illustrate how we can calculate the cost of preferred equity. If you take a look at the slide, then we have before us an example of company ABC. Company ABC wants to issue a preferred stock of face value 10 rupees. The board of directors have agreed to fix the annual dividend at 2 rupees per share. The lawyer's fee and the stockbroker's commission will cost 1 rupee per share, and the preferred share is floated at the market price of 13 rupees. So we need to calculate the cost of capital to the company for raising money through preferred stocks. So quite simply, we will use the perpetuity formula to compute the required rate of return. The required rate of return, R, is equal to div 1 divided by P naught, which is equal to 2 rupees divided by 13 rupees, and that is equal to approximately 15%. However, in order to calculate the weighted cost of preferred equity capital, we need to make a minor change, and we need to replace the market price by the net proceeds. The net proceeds, or NP, is equal to the price minus the flotation costs. In other words, the market price minus the transaction costs, and that is equal to 13 rupees minus 1 rupee, which is equal to 12 rupees. So the cost of preferred equity capital, or R, is equal to div 1 divided by NP, or the net proceeds, and that is equal to 2 rupees divided by 12 rupees, which is equal to 16.7%. So you will note that the flotation costs, or the transaction costs, add to the cost of the company in issuing the preferred equity capital. The point to note over here is that when we are calculating the cost of capital as opposed to the required rate of return, we have to take into account the transaction costs and the impact of taxation. In the case of preferred equity, there is no tax saving. So, as I mentioned, in the case of the bonds, there is a tax saving associated with the interest payment, but in the case of preferred equity, there is no tax saving. Why? Because whatever dividend is paid to the preferred equity holders is paid after calculation of the net income. Therefore, there is no tax saving attached to it. You pay the tax on the net income, and then after that, you pay the dividend to the shareholders, whether it is the preferred shareholders or the common shareholders. So now let's talk about the most difficult cost of capital computation of all, which is for the common equity. When we talk about calculating the cost of common equity, then we have basically to keep in mind that our starting point, again, is the required rate of return. The required rate of return, you will recall, for the common equity can be calculated using two approaches. The first approach that we spoke about was the old NPV formula, which was simplified to the Gordon's formula. Gordon's formula was simply that the required rate of return is equal to div 1 divided by P naught plus G, where div 1 is the forecasted dividend, P naught is the market price of the share, and G is the growth rate of the dividends. That was one way of calculating the required rate of return. The other way that we talked about in capital asset pricing theory was the security market line equation, or the SML equation. Here we mentioned that the required rate of return is equal to the risk-free rate of return plus the market premium multiplied by the beta, or the market risk, of the stock. Keep in mind that the risk premium is equal to the market rate of return minus the risk-free rate of return. So we have two ways of calculating the required rate of return for a common stock. Now, let us talk about the first approach, which is the dividends approach, or the Gordon's formula for calculating the required rate of return. The actual calculation of the cost of capital, as I have mentioned before, is one that must take into account practical considerations. And even though we have the Gordon's formula to help us calculate the required rate of return, we still have to decide on two things. We have to decide whether, one, we are raising the equity capital by issuing new or fresh common stocks, or two, whether we are raising the equity capital through reinvestment or retained earnings of the company. So the point to understand over here is simply that a company has two options when it talks about raising equity capital. You will recall from the balance sheet that under the liability section, there is a section for capital, and in that section you have equity capital and you have retained earnings. And the company has two options. It can either use the money that it has saved and plowed back from profits from previous years and use that as equity, or the other option it has is to go to the capital market and issue fresh shares or stocks and to sell them in the open market and to raise new equity capital from the market. Now, depending on which approach they use, the cost of equity capital will be different. So keep in mind that the cost of capital for equity is a bit more difficult to calculate than the cost for preferred stocks or bonds, because the dividends paid to common stockholders are not certain and they are not fixed, and they are certainly not observable or guaranteed. So the cash flows to the common stockholders are uncertain, and there is a greater degree of uncertainty associated with the calculation of the cost of capital for equity. However, let us do a simple numerical example to familiarize us with the two approaches for calculating the cost of equity capital. We will use the dividends approach first, and then we will use the capital asset pricing approach later. If you take a look at the slide, you'll see that company ABC wants to issue more common stock of face value 10 rupees. It is forecasted that next year the dividend is expected to be 2 rupees per share, assuming a dividend growth rate of 10% per annum. The lawyer's fee and stockbroker's commission will cost 1 rupee per share. Investors are confident about company ABC, so the common share is floated at a market price of 16 rupees. In other words, a premium of 6 rupees. If the capital structure of the company is entirely common equity, then what is the company's weighted average cost of capital? We will use two approaches and then compare the results. The first approach we'll use is the dividends growth model. So we can calculate the required rate of return for common stock using Gordon's formula, which we studied earlier. Gordon's formula is used for the case of perpetual investment and constant growth in dividends. We will have to consider two options over here. The first one is that of raising the equity through retained earnings. In this case, the required rate of return is equal to div 1 divided by P naught plus G, which is equal to 2 divided by 16 plus 0.1, and that is equal to 22.5%. The second approach we have is that of issuing new stock in the capital market. In this case, we will have to take into account not the market price but the net proceeds, because there is a flotation or transaction cost associated with the printing and issuance and sale of new stock. So the net proceeds are equal to the flotation price or market price minus the flotation costs, and that is equal to 16 rupees minus 1 rupee, which is equal to 15 rupees. So the required rate of return then is equal to div 1 divided by NP, or the net proceeds, plus G, and that is equal to 23.3%. Please note that it is cheaper for company ABC to raise equity capital through retained earnings than it is to incur the transaction costs associated with issuing new equity. And of course, the problem that we face in cost of equity calculations is which cost to pick. Now, let us talk about the second approach we can take to calculating the cost of common equity. That is the capital asset pricing model, or the security market line, which assumes efficient markets. So you are given some additional data. The T-bill rate of return, or the risk-free rate of return, is 10% per annum. The market rate of return of the overall market, you might suppose that it is the Karachi Stock Exchange, is 20%, and the beta, or the market risk, for the common stock of company ABC is equal to 1.25. Let us assume that you get this from a beta book published by one of the agencies. Now, the required rate of return using the SML equation is equal to RRF plus beta times RM minus RF, and that is equal to 22.5%. Please note that this is the same answer that you got for the required rate of return using the retained earnings approach. So the thing that you should keep in mind in calculating the cost of equity capital is that you have two broad approaches. One of them is the Gordon's formula for calculating the required rate of return, and the second one is the capital asset pricing theory's security market line equation, which uses beta in order to calculate the required rate of return. Also keep in mind that if you use the Gordon's formula approach, then you have to make a distinction between whether you are raising equity through retained earnings or whether you are raising equity through the issuance of new or fresh stock in the open market or in the stock market. The advantage of using the capital asset pricing approach is that you don't have to forecast dividends. And as I mentioned, forecasting is where most of the errors in valuation and in the calculation of costs take place. So the capital asset pricing model allows us to bypass this forecasting error. The other thing to keep in mind is that the capital asset pricing model will give you an answer which is identical, generally speaking, to the answer you get if you use Gordon's formula with the retained earnings approach. Why? Because the retained earnings approach does not take into account, and it does not need to take into account, the transaction costs, because when a company raises equity through retained earnings, then it does not have to issue any fresh equity in the open market. So there is no transaction cost. And you will recall that the capital asset pricing model also does not consider any transaction costs or taxes, because it is based on an ideal situation of an efficient market where there are no taxes and no transaction costs. With this, I will stop the presentation of the new material for this particular lecture. In the next lecture, we will combine the different costs that we have calculated for debt, preferred equity, and common equity in order to calculate the overall weighted average cost of capital for a firm that has capital in all three forms. And then we will proceed and talk about the concepts of operating leverage and financial leverage, return on equity, and then finally capital structuring theory as described by the Miller-Modigliani propositions. So let me now review some of the concepts and formulas that we have covered in this particular lecture. We began by saying that companies are forced to raise capital or money either because they are short of money or because they plan to embark on new investments. This forces them to go to the capital markets and the money markets in order to raise money in two basic forms, either as debt or as equity. Every company tries to market itself as a company that has high profitability and minimal risk so that it can raise capital at the lowest possible cost. We mentioned that the weighted average cost of capital for an entire company or firm is similar to the required rate of return concept that we spoke about when we were doing share valuation and when we were studying the capital asset pricing model. The major difference is that weighted average cost of capital, or WACC, takes into consideration certain practical issues like taxation and transaction costs, whereas the required rate of return, as formulated in the capital asset pricing model, is based on an ideal model, which is one of efficient markets where there are no taxes or transaction costs. We then spoke about the calculation of the weighted average cost of capital, or WACC. WACC is equal to RDXD plus RPXP plus REXE. D, P, and E here refer to debt, preferred stock, and common equity. And we will assume that a company can raise capital in three different forms. We talked about how to calculate the cost of debt. The cost of debt can be estimated using the bond pricing equation. We can substitute the different values for the coupons in the bond pricing equation. But now, instead of using the market price of the bond as the present value, we will use the net proceeds. And the net proceeds is equal to the market price minus the transaction costs or flotation costs. Then we have the present value bond pricing equation with one variable, which is R. That represents the required rate of return. And we can solve for the required rate of return using trial and error. After we calculate the required rate of return from the bond pricing equation, we can then reduce the required return by the amount of tax saving. We mentioned that the interest that a company pays to the bondholders is tax deductible. Therefore, it is a cost saving. And the final formula for calculating the cost of debt is equal to the required rate of return multiplied by 1 minus TC, where TC is the corporate tax rate. We then spoke about calculating the cost of preferred equity, and that is very simple because preferred stocks can be valued using the perpetuity formula. The required rate of return for preferred stock is equal to the forecasted dividend, div 1, divided by the market price, P naught. That was the required rate of return, but when we are calculating the cost of preferred equity capital, then we have to take into account the practical consideration of transaction costs. So instead of using the market price for P naught, we will use the net proceeds, which is equal to the market price minus the transaction costs. Keep in mind that there is no tax advantage for preferred equity because the dividends for preferred shareholders are given out from the net income after you have paid the taxes. Finally, we spoke about the most important and also the most complicated cost of capital, which is that for common equity. We mentioned that there are two broad approaches for calculating the required rate of return for common equity. One of them was the Gordon's formula, or the NPV dividends approach. Here, the required rate of return is equal to the forecasted dividend divided by the market price plus the dividend growth rate. So the second approach for calculating the required rate of return for common equity was provided by the capital asset pricing model. The required rate of return is equal to the risk-free rate of return plus the risk premium multiplied by the beta, or the market risk. And the risk premium is defined as the market rate of return minus the risk-free rate of return. The advantage of using the capital asset pricing model to calculate the required rate of return is that you do not have to use forecasted dividends, and therefore you can eliminate a large source of error in the calculation. The reason why the common equity capital is difficult to calculate is because the dividends are not fixed and they are not regular. Also keep in mind that if you use the Gordon's approach to calculating the required rate of return, then you have to make a distinction between equity that is raised in the form of retained earnings and plowback versus equity that has been raised by the issuance or the sale of fresh stocks in the stock market. There is no transaction cost that we associate with retained earnings, but there is a transaction cost associated with the sale of new shares in the stock market. So with this, I close the new contents for this lecture. In the following lectures, we will talk about the combined weighted average cost of capital for the firm, taking into account the three different types of capital. We will talk about operating leverage and financial leverage, and also the capital structure theory presented by Miller and Modigliani. On behalf of the Virtual University of Pakistan, the Ministry of Science and Technology, and Mubashir Humayun, I thank you for your kind attention and patience. Khuda Hafiz, aur Assalamu Alaikum.